from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, President Bush has wrapped up his trip to the Middle East, and it really must make the buttons bust on the suit with the strange rectangular shape in the back for him to know what he's left behind after having spent the last week in the Middle East. It was National Public Radio this very day that reported that the Palestinians are less encouraged about a solution to the dispute with Israel than they were before the visit started. So mission something plished. And the New York Times reports this after President Bush begged, would that be too strong a word, the Saudis to increase oil production, and the Saudis said, you know, maybe next something. This is Steve Hadley, President Bush's national security advisor, speaking after the Saudis sort of dissed the president. Hadley told reporters that the, quote, the Iraq war was a stress, unquote, on the relationship between the United States and the Saudis. John Alterman, a Mideast expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said Saudi confidence in the United States had been, quote, extremely shaken by the war. They'll be polite, Alterman said, but they're not really going to put themselves out to help this president, unquote. The grown-ups, babe. Mission plished. Extremely. What was the word? What was the phrase? Well, the Iraq war was a stress on the relationship, possibly because the Saudis and all the other Arabs warned against invading Iraq before it happened. Did you know that? Interesting. The United Nations is now accusing foreign intelligence agencies in Afghanistan, guess whose, of conducting nighttime raids and killing civilians without impunity. See, that's what we need. We need more impunity. So let's work on that. The Army Corps of Engineers has fallen short. No, it's not me saying it. In an effort to come up with a strategy to protect coastal Louisiana, that's what the National Research Council said this week. Congress instructed the Corps to deliver by mid last year a statement of requirements to protect Louisiana from Cat 5 hurricanes. Committee of the National Research Council took the Corps to task for its draft report issued in March of this year. Well, you know, 8 months, 9 months late. As long as it's bad. Instead of providing useful roadmap, the Corps study lacks clear recommendations and clear cost estimates. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, it's a fine report. Congress and the citizens of Louisiana look to the Corps of Engineers for their expertise, the report said. That's where they're wrong. That's not what the citizens of Louisiana look to the Corps for, if I may say so. Myself and me, I'm hello, welcome to the show. -110 degrees in the valley. How you doing, everybody?
My love. I time to stop and feel the need. Funny how those years go by, changing you, changing me. I remember love's fever in our hearts, girl, and in our minds. Imagine that this love is through, feeling the pain, girl, when you lose. Oh, it's too hot, late.
Too hot.
Gotta run for shelter, gotta run for shade. Anger, what a mess we made. So long ago, you were my love, feeling the pain. Gotta run for shade. It's too hot, lady. Gotta cool this anger from this mess that we've made. It's too hot, lady. Gotta run for shelter, gotta run for shade. It's
too hot,
so hot, lady. Gotta cool this anger. Oh, I've gotta cool this mess we've made. It's so hot, baby. Yes, it's so hot. I just can't take it. I can't stand no more, baby. We were once lovers. We took our vows. A man and wife forever. Whoa.
And I'll be going to the valley. That's the weird part. Hey, from the edge of America. Hey, I never do that. From the edge, I hate you. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. You know, we often hear from politicians trying to make us feel good about ourselves that the United States is the most generous country on earth. So, this would come as a surprise. You've heard about the Chinese earthquake, as well as the cyclone in Myanmar, and we're awaiting word from Pastor John Hagee if that's God's punishment for those countries never planning to have a gay pride parade. But the Chinese earthquake, 50,000, I think, is the new estimate of the deaths, and heart-wrenching pictures on the front page of the New York Times every day of survivors, amazing footage on CNN today of a 94-year-old woman pulled out of the rubble, still alive after 4 days of being buried. So, you know, we open our hearts, ladies and gentlemen, as the most generous nation on earth. Dateline Washington, the United States plans to contribute $500,000 for earthquake relief efforts in China, anticipating an appeal for aid by the International Red Cross. You see, we knew that they were going to ask us to give the lowest amount any civilized country could ever be thought of giving to this disaster. And we did it in advance. It's an initial contribution in response to the event, said White House spokeswoman Dana Perino, adding that the Bush administration, in answer to your question that she heard, you think, the Bush administration will, quote, consider what, if any, additional funding is needed. You know, the $500,000 should do you, though. Really. If you're prudent. The idea of sacrifice during wartime came up this week from self-same grown-up. President Bush said that he gave up golfing in 2003 in solidarity with the families of soldiers who were dying in Iraq, concluding it was just not worth it anymore to play golf in a time of war. I don't want some mom whose son may have recently died to see Commander-in-Chief playing golf, he said in a White House interview. I feel I owe it to the families to be in solidarity as best I can with them, and I think playing golf during a war just sends the wrong signal. That's why he's going mountain biking now. That sends the right signal. He said he decided to stop playing golf on August 19th, 2003. He knows the exact date when he stopped playing golf. That's when a truck bomb in Baghdad killed UN Special Representative Sergio Vieira de Mello and more than a dozen others. He said he received word of the attack to the president while playing golf at Crawford. He just pulled me off the golf course and I said it's just not worth it to do anymore. The problem is that, according to the Washington Post, Sergio Vieira de Mello was killed August 19th, 2003. According to news reports, Bush was still playing golf 2 days later at the Crosswater Golf Course in Sun River, Oregon. And he also played September 28th with friends at Andrews Air Force Base and again there on October 13th in honor of Columbus Day. I have not, you know, those are just the facts, ladies and gentlemen. He knew the date that he gave up golf. He just didn't give it up. The nuclear waste cleanup thing sounds better and better. For 40 years, Oldbury Nuclear Power Station in Britain has been providing energy to many thousands of homes, but when it closes this December, it will be 110 years before the site is returned to its natural state, and even then, the experts do not know how much contamination could remain. Oldbury is a prominent landmark on the Severn Estuary, just 15 miles north of Bristol. It generates enough energy for Bristol and Bath. Well, when it closes, take a shower. Thank you. Good night. The Nuclear Decommissioning Authority admits no one really knows how much damage has been done to the landscape and will continue to be done in the future. Clean, safe, cheap, plentiful nuclear power. We don't know how much damage it's done. So build more, wouldn't you? Wouldn't that be the sane, grown-up response? And now, ladies and gentlemen, a mistake. If you're those keeping score, that would be the first mistake of the broadcast. Several more to follow. But now, news from outside the bubble. But who's counting? In almost every town and village, this is from the Times of London, in almost every town and village rocked by China's massive earthquake, distraught parents point to the ruins of a school where their only child died. Angry citizens have deluged the Chinese government with demands for an explanation. The government vowed this week to punish anyone found to be responsible for shoddy construction. Well, that puts them ahead of our government. Yes, the levees are still on my mind. Yang Rong of the Ministry of Housing and Urban Rural Development said officials have been ordered to investigate why so many Chinese school buildings crumbled during the earthquake. Probably the same quality control they used in the cat food. The quake destroyed almost 7,000 classrooms, and that's before figures have emerged from the two hardest-hit areas. Education and housing officials took the rare move of receiving questions online from Chinese citizens over the many children among the death toll. President Hu, I know, flew to the battered province of Sichuan as an aftershock wreaked new havoc. In a rare real-time online exchange with ordinary Chinese officials, measured answers were met with the kind of furious comments that have echoed across the internet since the quake occurred. One said, China's government buildings at every level are more magnificent than those of developed countries. The schoolrooms are worse than Africa's. Who's to blame? One official said, there may have been shoddy work and inferior materials during the construction of some school buildings, unquote. That's safe. From the Asia Times, following up on an item we had on this broadcast last week. The Bush administration's plan to create a new crescendo of accusations against Iran for allegedly smuggling arms to Shiite militias has encountered a couple of setbacks. The government of Prime Minister Maliki refused to endorse U.S. charges of Iranian involvement in arms smuggling to Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army, and a plan to show off a huge collection of Iranian arms captured in and around the central city of Karbala had to be called off after it was discovered that none of the arms was of Iranian origin. We had that last week from the blog of the LA Times. They didn't bother to put it on their newspaper, because who reads the newspaper? The arms capture from Shiite militiamen in Karbala did not include a single Iranian weapon. The Bush administration and Commander David Petraeus had plotted a sequence of events that would build domestic U.S. political support for whatever against Iran over its meddling in Iraq. Because they're neighbors. It's meddling. We're from 6,000 miles away. We're helping. And especially its alleged export of arms to Shiite militias. The plan was key to a briefing document to be prepared by Petraeus on the alleged Iranian role in arming and training Shiite militias that would be revealed to the public after the Maliki government endorsed it. We were told by the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff on April 25 that Petraeus was preparing that briefing to be given in the next couple of weeks. The centerpiece of that document, completed in late April, was the claim that arms captured in Basra bore 2008 manufacture dates on them. U.S. officials also planned to display to reporters Iranian weapons captured in both Basra and Karbala. But on May 4, after an Iraqi delegation returned from talks in Iran, Maliki's spokesman said that Maliki was forming his own cabinet committee to investigate the U.S. claims. "We want to find tangible information," he said, "not information based on speculation." Huh. The government considered the U.S. evidence of Iranian government arms smuggling to be insufficient. Senior U.S. military officials were clearly furious with Maliki. "We were blindsided by this." Then came the capture of weapons in Karbala. When U.S. munitions expert went to Karbala to see the alleged cache of Iranian weapons, they found nothing they could credibly link to Iran. The U.S. command had to inform reporters the event had been canceled, explaining it had all been a, quote, misunderstanding, unquote. Hence the briefing discussed on this broadcast last week by General Bergner, where he gave some details of the captured weapons in Karbala, but refrained from charging any Iranian role. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. No, just seeing if there's anything else cute there. News from outside the bubble, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Man, this is an error-prone broadcast, I guess. The Independent newspaper of London, though, does report on the new Iraq. A woman named Ronak, who had fled to a woman's shelter in the Kurdish city of Sulaymaniyah after she was accused of adultery by her husband. She was shot three times by a man hiding on the roof of a nearby building. She only survived after a four-hour operation. She was the latest victim of a huge increase across Iraq in the number of honor killings of women for alleged immorality by their own families. Many are burned to death by having gasoline or paraffin poured over them and set ablaze. That's why gas prices are so high. Others are shot or strangled. The new Iraq. The United Nations estimates that at least 255 women died in honor-related killings in Kurdistan alone in the first 6 months of last year alone. The murder of women who are deemed to have disobeyed traditional codes of morality is even more common in the rest of Iraq, where government authority is not as strong as it is in Kurdistan. A surprising reason explaining the massive increase in the number of honor killings is the availability of cheap mobile phones able to take pictures. Men photograph themselves making love to their girlfriends, pass the pictures on to their friends. This often appears to be a lethal act of bravado in a society where premarital or extramarital sex justifies killing. In 2007, at least 350 women in Iraq, double the figure for the previous year, suffered violence as a result of mobile phone evidence. although the true figure is probably much higher. Whole extended families and clans feel a genuine sense of shame because of some supposed act of immorality. Often retribution is carefully planned in the case of Ronak, whose real name has to be concealed, lest the reporter be burned. Her would-be killer carefully chose his firing point in an empty office building besides the shelter where she took refuge, and may have waited for her for a long time. She has three children. The new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. A poorly run Pentagon program for providing civilian employees in Iraq and Afghanistan with workman's compensation has allowed defense contractors and insurance companies to gouge American taxpayers, according to a House committee. But what else is new? I don't want it to sound like we've... Let's look at the brighter side. The market for outsourced legal work is booming in India. Lawyers there are doing a lot of routine work. They're also handling some interesting legal matters, including work for the makers of television and shows and movies. The legal outsourcing industry in India has grown by about 60% a year in the last 3 years. A lot of the work is going to India, boosted by rules that produce thousands of pages of documents and lawsuits that require a careful and expensive review. Indian lawyers handle a lot of document review. They also do legal research and draft contracts. My people in India can do everything from here except sign the opinion letter and appear in an American court, said Russell Smith of the Indian outsourcing company SDD. Indian lawyers even did work legal work on Borat and drafted a motion for his TV show seeking the dismissal of a libel suit against the show's producers. New work relating to American bankruptcies is now providing new opportunities for Indian lawyers. Hey, as long as we're helping, that's all I care about. No, actually, I care about the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry. Sorry.
Yes, it happened twice. You didn't dream it. First, on our cavalcade of recorded apologies, here's Sue Simmons, longtime anchorwoman for Channel 4 News in New York City, after she was caught doing a live tease, as they call them, because they're supposed to tease us into watching their show. And at the end of the tease, dropped, as they say now, the F-bomb.
We need to acknowledge an unfortunate mistake that I made and one of the teases we bring to you before this program. While we were live, just after 10 o'clock, I said a word that many people find offensive. I'm truly sorry. It was a mistake on my part, and I sincerely apologize.
Sue Simmons, ladies and gentlemen. But wait, there's more. Barack Obama was being asked a question in a press appearance, and sort of passed on the question, refused to answer the question, and told the reporter he might get to it later, and called her sweetie, a female reporter, of course. Then he left this message on her telephone voicemail.
Hi, Peggy. This is Barack Obama calling to apologize on two fronts. One was, you didn't get your question answered, and I apologize. I thought that we had set up interviews with all the local stations. I guess we got it with your station, but you weren't the reporter that got the interview. And so I broke my word. I apologize for that, and I will make up for it. Second apology for using the word sweetie. It's a bad habit of mine. I do it sometimes with all kinds of people. Mean no disrespect, and so... I am duly chastened on that front. Feel free to call me back. I suspect that my press team will be happy to try to make it up to you whenever we are in Detroit next.
So long, sweetie. Dateline Greenwood, Mississippi. Greenwood City Councilman John Lee has apologized for using a racial slur in an email. Lee, who is white, used the N-word to describe the council's president, David Jordan. The email sent to about 15 people came after a council meeting about black-on-black crime. Lee said that he is not a racist and his comments came in a moment of frustration. Jordan has called for Lee to quit his job. Yahoo has settled with the immediate families of two Chinese dissidents imprisoned after Yahoo helped secretly identify them to the Chinese government. The terms of the settlement were not disclosed. The revelation came a week after lawmakers in this country called Yahoo executives moral pygmies for not assisting the immediate families of the prisoners, Shi Tao and Wang Xiaoning. Both men were sentenced to 10-year terms for crimes against the state after Yahoo formally submitted their email records to Chinese officials. The family sued Yahoo in U.S. court. At the hearing, Yahoo apologized to the families of the prisoners who were seated directly behind him, behind Yang. This would be Yahoo General Counsel Michael Callahan. And who's the Yang? Who's the Yang in this story? Anyway, a Yahoo official apologized to the families who were seated directly behind him, but he would not commit to compensating them. Dolly Parton is upset. Outraged, as a matter of fact, by the racist and sexually explicit comments aired on Howard Stern's radio show that had been attributed to her. She accused the radio shock jock of digitally altering her voice after she was broadcast making obscene comments about Kenny Rogers and Linda Ronstadt. Parton is furious and says a recording of her voice has been digitally manipulated. I cannot believe what Howard Stern has done to me. In a blue million years, I would never have such vulgar things come out of my mouth. They've done some editing or some sort of trickery to make this horrible or horrible thing. Parton graciously apologized for what was aired, but she insisted she had no part to play in the broadcast. She assured fans if there was ever going to be a lawsuit, it's going to be over this. All right. Dolly Parton versus Howard Stern, and there's no court TV? You tell me. While the episode wasn't as bad as she'd feared, Michelle Childress said the recent episode of the Dr. Phil show in which she'd been featured was a total farce. No, really? And her phobia was taken out of context. No. There were a lot of questions that Dr. Phil asked me that weren't aired, but they would air my reaction to them to make me look worse, said Childress. They nipped and tucked a lot of the showing. Interesting choice of verbiage. And so I would look worse than what I was. It was totally a farce and totally out of context to what I was supposed to be on there for. They just used me as a tool for ratings. Unquote. Childress's phobia is that whenever she sees an obese person eating, the sight causes her to become violently ill. It's a triggered response, something her mother suffered from as well. She says the staff from Dr. Phil's show misled her by inviting her to take part in a show that would help to deal with unique phobias. Instead, she found herself on a show titled, I'm Hot, You're Not. She was portrayed as a former beauty queen that hated being around fat people. I thought the Dr. Phil show was just about the only talk show that was on the up, except for Oprah, she said in an email to the show's associate producer, Emily Bailey. She forgot the other up. Or is that new? She continued in the letter to Emily Bailey. You knew the whole time the title was called I'm Hot and You're Not. If I would have known that, I would never have tried to seek help for my problem and in that sick way. It's integrity here that was missing. I guess that's just Hollywood. Bailey responded to the email the same day. I apologize sincerely. I want you to know that I personally feel horrible about you leaving the show so dissatisfied. The truth is, we never know what Dr. Phil is going to say to our guests. Really? Really? Don't know what the title of the show is going to be in advance? Interesting. Graphics department must be really quick. Actor Dennis Farina is sorry for his arrest at L.A. International Airport after security found a loaded gun in his carry-on baggage. I apologize to anyone and everyone that I've caused any embarrassment or inconvenience to, he said in a statement. It is my own stupidity to find myself in this embarrassing situation. The weapon was not registered, and the charge was upgraded from a misdemeanor to a felony. He's out in a current movie. You figure it out. Roughly 5 hours after making comments about someone aiming a gun at Barack Obama during his speech to the National Rifle Association. Mike Huckabee issued the following statement. During my speech at the NRA, a loud noise backstage that sounded like a chair falling distracted the crowd and interrupted the speech. I made an offhand remark that was in no way intended to offend or disparage Senator Obama. I apologize that my comments were offensive. That was never my intention. Speaking of Pastor John Hagee, McCain's supporter, whose controversial comments about Catholicism angered church leaders, he's issued a letter of apology to the president of the Catholic League, who heartily accepted it. Hagee admitted that he, quote, may have contributed to the mistaken impression that the anti-Jewish violence of the Crusades and the Inquisition defines the modern-day Catholic Church. It most certainly does not. Hagee, an evangelical, has been outspoken in both his support for Israel and characterizing the Catholic Church as an apostate church and the great whore. He said now in his letter he means none of those to apply to the Catholic Church. Not all Catholics were mollified by the apology. The executive director of Catholics and Alliance for the Common Good said it would be nice if McCain apologized. A psychologist who helps lead the post-traumatic stress disorder program at a medical facility for veterans in Texas told staff members to refrain from diagnosing post-traumatic stress because so many veterans were seeking government disability payments for the condition. But the VA secretary said in a statement that was inappropriate and does not represent VA policy. The psychologist has been counseled and is extremely apologetic, said the head of the VA. Clinton supporter Terry McAuliffe appeared last Sunday in Meet the Press. He described anchor Tim Russert's father as being in heaven right now, Tim probably having a scotch. Turns out that Tim Russert's father is very much alive. McAuliffe sent a bottle of scotch this week to Russert's father as an apology, with a note wishing him many more years of scotch drinking. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, a Canadian apology. Organizers of the Canadian Tulip Festival in Ottawa have apologized to a marching band for turning it away from the opening ceremonies after its members wore uniforms displaying support for Falun Gong. The festival was intended to celebrate international friendship, was not a place to protest, but the band's members called the move discriminatory. And so the Ottawa Tulip Festival has apologized. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Wearing cheap perfume and a Turkish towel,
kicking back in her crib,
she hummed a melody as she messed around. It was a happy little melody she learned uptown. Slipping in her dress, she got the thought,
turn the temperature up.
Even the boys of town ain't seen it this hot. It was a simple little melody she hummed a lot. She wasn't
gone uptown just to hobnob around.
She had a Texas kind of attitude that put her in a mood. She wasn't really quite from Texas, but that's alright
with you.
She just hummed her little melody, that's all she had to do. She was a shoo-in,
yes,
what she was doing.
Look,
she wasn't fooling.
No,
they called her down there. They called her
wildcat.
She was
she
like
was
that.
All like that.
Wearing Spanish beads
and an attitude.
She hummed a melody as she locked the room. It was a catchy little melody, kinda like Shaboom. Slipping down the street where the action was, she felt the heads turning and she heard the buzz. It was a happy little melody, and that's because she wasn't
going uptown just to hobnob around.
She had a Texas kind of attitude that put her in a mood. She wasn't really quite from Texas, but that's
alright with you.
She just hummed a little melody, that's all she had to do. She had a Lone Star kind of attitude that put her in a mood. She wasn't officially a Texan, but that's all right with you. She just hummed her little melody. That's all she had to do. She was a shoo-in.
All could see she's
fooling.
No, Cherie,
she's doing
harmony with herself.
She had a red letter day, what not getting her way.
She's truly on the case, she was going someplace.
What nothing you could say, as she bopped along the way.
She's trying to get to town, so she's shuffling on down.
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, some news from the digital wonderland. Can you hear me? I'm still in analog. Thank goodness. Handfuls of Windows Vista Media Center users found themselves blocked from making recordings of their favorite TV shows this week when a broadcast flag triggered the software's built-in copy protection measures. The flag affected users trying to record primetime NBC shows on Monday evening, both over-the-air broadcast and cable. The problem is being looked into by NBC and Microsoft. The incident serves as another reminder that digital rights management gives content providers control over what you can watch when you want to watch it. Vista users began reporting problems on Monday evening, starting with problems trying to record American Gladiator. Well, you got to feel sorry for those people. They're using Windows, and they want to record American Gladiator. Please help. They were presented with an error that read, "Recording canceled. TV show cannot be recorded. Restrictions set by the broadcaster of the content prohibit recording of this program." The flag only triggered copy protection measures in Windows Vista. DirecTV recordings and TiVo recordings were not affected. Broadcast flag, according to officials at NBC, was likely switched on by accident. Broadcasters can give instructions to the software built into digital video recorders, although they almost never do. Now. Yet. And concern over digital TV testing in North Carolina has erupted. Wilmington, North Carolina will be the first place to lose analog television in a test of next year's switchover to digital. But there's a possible side effect, the inability of its residents to receive TV signals in an emergency. Oh, just that. During the past 20 years, many inexpensive battery-operated analog TVs have been sold. People have come to rely on them when they lose power or cable or satellite access. At this point, there are few low-price, battery-operated digital TV alternatives. According to the International Hurricane Research Center, Wilmington, North Carolina ranks ninth on the list of the 10 most vulnerable U.S. mainland areas to hurricane, and September 10th, the day of the analog shutoff in Wilmington, is the peak of hurricane season. Good thinking, everybody. You know, the primary campaign in the Democratic Party slogs on. Hillary Clinton won a major expected victory in West Virginia this week. Barack Obama drew the endorsement of Senator John Edwards this week. There are two primaries coming up this week. Oh, by the way, before I forget, because I've forgotten so far, an apology to the listeners and a correction. I said last week that Senator John McCain's wife, Cindy, was a Coors beer heiress. She is an Anheuser-Busch heiress. Okay. I just thought Republican Coors, you know, like you do. Anyway, so the campaign continues this week with primaries in West Virginia, in Kentucky, which Hillary Clinton is expected to win, and Oregon, which Barack Obama is expected to win. And there is already a spate of stories appearing pointing fingers at various members of the Clinton campaign for the errors that have stripped her not only of her original aura of inevitability, but possibly of victory itself. It It could be tantamount to another edition of Clinton Something being next here on the show.
Clinton Something, the campaign years.
Okay, this is Lexington Mom's robocall, take 7.
Hi, this is Hillary Clinton. I'm so sorry for interrupting your dinner time, but did you know that Barack Obama went to Harvard Law
Hey.
Hold on.
Okay, we've got a short window to record these and turn them around.
Sorry, Hillary. Maggie said you were resting.
I'm recording robocalls, James. In campaign terms, that is resting. Yeah. What do you got?
Look, I hate to be the bearer of any tidings, but, we're beginning to lose control of the news agenda again. All that McCain-Bush-Obama debate about foreign policy this week.
Yeah.
It looked like they already removed your chair.
Kenny, can you turn off my phone for a few minutes?
Sure. How will I know you're ready to resume recording?
I'll call your name.
Okay. And how will I hear that?
Just go take a 5, kid.
Okay.
So what are you suggesting, James? What in your infinite wisdom would you like me to do? Challenge all 3 of them to a foreign policy debate?
No.
Come in on the side of McCain or Obama? Exactly how do I get into this thing? Maggie and I have been going around on this thing for 36 hours and...
And I've been talking to enough Southern superdelegates to fill a West Virginia family picnic, so we all been working. But, maybe since the track we're taking on foreign policy is common sense, just owning that spot between administration and Obama, maybe there's some common sense foreign policy thing that you can work into your robocalls.
Well... See, this is the sort of thing you should have gotten to me while all the Kentucky stuff was being written. I've got 25 call scripts here. Calls to Louisville older workers, Lexington moms with 2 or more kids, Paducah retirees, bridge players, and Bowling Green.
I tried to call you. You were on the phone recording your scripts.
Damn it, why doesn't this campaign still have a second red phone?
Again, no tidings, but I think a condition of your last loan to the campaign would get rid of the second red phone.
Of course it wasn't. Who told you that? Did Maggie tell you that?
Look, Hillary, it doesn't make any difference if you Elon Ghost told me that. Here we are. You want to put some common sense foreign policy thing in your robocalls? I got a pen.
And how exactly is a common sense foreign policy sentence fragment in a robocall to laid off distillery workers in Frankfort, Kentucky, supposed to get into the national news cycle? See, this is exactly the kind of crap Mark Penn used to feed me.
No. Mark Penn, all due respect to the recently fired, fed you an entirely different kind of crap. For one thing, we played a tape of the call in our morning media conference call. Mm-hmm. For another, maybe we get one of those laid off workers to invite you over to his house. We feed him a question about foreign policy based on your phone call. We make that a media opportunity so wide open, even MSNBC is invited. See, how about that? Mark Penn never suggested anything that cogent. If he had, half the staff would have had infarctions on his spot.
Okay, James. So Maggie and Mandy and I were just too testosterone challenged to think of that, okay?
No.
So what's your great idea about what that sliver of common sense foreign policy is?
Look, I'm not trying to upset anybody's apple cart, except that, we running out of apples. Now, what if you say President Bush says we don't talk to our enemies?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Obama says we should talk to our enemies.
Mm-hmm.
I say there's a better way.
Which is?
Hey, it's a robocall, not a speech. If they wanted substance, they wouldn't be living in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll try ad-libbing something.
Okay. Hey, what if you did an event where you made a public phone call to Ahmadinejad to tell him that if you get to be president, you wouldn't be talking to him? See, that's kind of centrist common sense,
You got superdelegates to pester.
Okay. I'm not even getting paid.
I'm not getting paid either. Kenny? Hello, Kenny? Oh, great. Kenny, if you can hear me, I'm ready now. Damn, who canceled the other red phone? Yes, what is it?
Hey, hon. Just checking in from West Bumflick. How's it going?
Well, I'll tell you how it's going. Somebody canceled the second red phone, so I'm sitting here waiting for Kenny to come back into the booth so I can keep recording my robocalls and maybe catch a five-minute dinner break. How's it going with you?
Oh, man, your brain trust has got me appearing in places so rural these people just have photographs of teeth. I mean, I was probably bigfooting your media strategy when I was speaking in areas that were actually populated, but...
Hon, it was nothing of the sort, but let's be honest. The folks in West Bumflick were a lot happier to see you show up than they would be to see me. I mean, I'm a New Yorker slash Pennsylvanian, and when I try to speak Southern, even I'm appalled. You... Well, you're you.
All right. Well, look, never mind about me. How's your morale? You see what happens when you just refuse to quit and don't care what any of the experts say?
Yeah. They think of you as the female Mike Huckabee.
Hey, Mike Huckabee quit the race so long ago, he can't even get booked on Saturday Night Live anymore. Mm. You're still hot.
I'm going to hope you're saying that in a media sense, because... Did you say never mind about me?
Huh? I'm so tired, I have no idea what I just said. But
hello, Senator Clinton.
Yeah.
I'm back. Can we get these done? Because I'm already turning them around on my dinner break.
All right, already.
Because that's how much I believe in you.
Sure, Kenny. Let me just finish this call.
Okay.
Bill, I'll talk to you when...
When I get to East Bumflick. Okay, hon. Just remember, you can't be the comeback kid if you don't stay in it.
I know, but all the money we're lending to the campaign...
Oh, I got contributors to my foundation you haven't even met yet. No sweat. Bye-bye.
You ready, Kenny?
Born ready. Lexington Mom's robocall. Take 8.
Hi, I'm Hillary Clinton. So sorry for calling during dinner time, but I was just thinking, if President Bush says we never talk to our enemies and Barack Obama says we always do, what do I say? Crap. Kenny, let's start over.
You got it.
Youthful angst and late middle-aged thirst for power. Together they add up to Clinton something, the campaign years.
Rattlesnake milk and buzzard eggs, mountain lion ears and wildcat legs. Put them all together and you will have the beginning of a Texas stew. Prickly pear sprouts and bramble joints, berry bush fawns and cactus points. Stir them in lightly and you will have the middle stages of a Texas stew. Add a little kick of joy juice and a barrel of dynamite. And when you feel the pot trying to break, you know you got the mixture just about right. Throw in any rough, tough stuff you've got. Leave it on the flames till it's bubbling hot. And if it knocks you out, you know you've got what the Texans call a Texas stew.
Hey, honey, you ain't scared of snakes, are you?
Me scared of snakes and I was born in Texas. Is you a brand new food?
Well, child, you know we got buzzard legs and mountain ears and wildcat legs all mixed up in this stew. You know what a mountain lion is?
I used to play with them little old kittens when I was a youngin'.
You did? We got prickly pear sprouts, bramble joints, berry bush thorns, cactus points. You think you can stand a taste of that?
Just like throwing a rabbit in the briar patch.
You know, child, you in there? Add a little kickapoo joy juice and a barrel of dynamite. And when you feel the pop trying to break loose, you know you got the mixture just about right. Throw in any rough, tough stuff you got. Leave it on the flames till it's bubbling hot. And if the taste kills you, then you know you've got what the Texans call a Texas stew. How about hippo lips?
Uh-uh.
Turkey tonsils?
Uh-uh.
Gnat liver?
Uh-uh.
Flea cutlets?
Uh-uh.
How
was born in Texas and raised in Texas. I ain't gonna eat nothing but a Texas stew.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you? A lot of news of the warm this week. Climate change is already altering our planet's biology, with only life in Antarctica so far spared the influence, according to new scientists. Covering an analysis of tens of thousands of individual local studies covering shrinking glaciers, changing river flows, melting permafrost, increased coastal erosion, and warming lakes and rivers. It adds up, the authors say, to the first global picture that unambiguously demonstrates the effect of human-induced climate change. The study, published in Nature, is based on more comprehensive data than any previous investigation of the biological effects of climate change. The team examined 28,000 data sets, found that 90% of them revealed alterations in the direction expected as a response to warming. The figure for physical changes, such as diminishing glaciers, was even higher at 95%. Change that is having the biggest and most obvious biological impact is the early arrival of spring. This could cause entire ecosystems to become unbalanced if species respond to the warmer weather at different rates. These impacts were most concentrated in Europe, North America, and parts of Asia, where there are already strong seasonal changes. Worldwide effects were also apparent in the ecosystems of oceans, lakes, and rivers. Aside from that, we're fine. Changes to the migration patterns of fish have led to them invading waters that were once too cold. Other important impacts include an increase in the extent of forest fires each year in Canada. Meanwhile, in Canada, the conclusion that the impacts are due to human-made change rather than natural climatic cycles is likely to prove controversial. Or not. Or, yes. Peru's Cordillera Blanca, a snow-topped northern mountain range sometimes called the Peruvian Switzerland, except for the cuckoo clocks, is slowly disappearing because of climate change. The glaciers making up the range, declared a natural World Heritage Site by UNESCO, have steadily been shrinking, says Marco Zapata. Viva! The head of the glaciology unit of Peru's National Institute for Natural Resources. The Cordillera Blanca has diminished by 9 meters between 1948 and 76, between 77 and now by around 20 meters. The time left for tourists to see the spectacular zone is limited. It is known that the shrinking process of the glaciers is irreversible, says Zapata, and nothing can be done. That's a little fatalistic. Polar bears and their melting habitat sent a wake-up call to South Florida water managers this week, the same day the federal government added the polar bear to its endangered species list, actually threatened species list, I think. Because of global warming, South Florida water managers agreed to take a year-long look at how melting ice could raise sea levels that could claim the southern part of the state. Well, so we don't have to change the voting machines again. They'll be wet. And while carbon dioxide has been getting lots of publicity in climate change, reactive forms of nitrogen are also building up in the environment. Scientists warn the public does not yet know much about nitrogen, but in many ways it is as big an issue as carbon, and due to the interactions of nitrogen and carbon, makes the challenge of providing food and energy to the world's peoples without harming the global environment a tremendous challenge, says University of Virginia Environmental Sciences Professor James Galloway. We're accumulating reactive nitrogen in the environment at alarming rates, he says. This may prove to be as serious as putting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. He's author of a paper on the topic in the current issue of Science Journal. Nitrogen alone is inert and harmless. I've worked with people like that. Reactive nitrogen compounds such as ammonia have been released by its use in nitrogen-based fertilizers and the large-scale burning of fossil fuels. Various forms of nitrogen contribute to greenhouse warming, smog, haze, acid rain, dead zones with little or no life along the coasts, and depletion of the ozone layer in the atmosphere. There are ways to reduce nitrogen, they propose. They're not as fatalistic as the other guy. These methods range from encouraging nitrogen uptake by plants to recovering and reusing nitrogen from manure and sewage to decreasing nitrogen emissions from fossil fuel burning. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, the black truffle, one of the most exclusive and expensive delicacies on the planet, is under threat from climate change, a mysterious species of underground fungus. With reported aphrodisiac and therapeutic properties, the aromatic truffles are highly fragile, cannot withstand more than 3 weeks without water. I know the feeling. But prolonged drought in many of their prime growing regions in Europe and predictions about global warming suggest their future is grim. The bad harvest years, which used to be the exception, are becoming the norm, according to Jean-Charles Savignac, president of the Federation of Truffle Culture. The three main producers, France, Italy, and Spain, provide about 100 tons of the item per year. In the 19th century, it was between 1,000 and 1,600 tons. In France, this winter's harvest yielded half of what had been expected. It's bad news for people. Worse news for pigs. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, just to make you feel proud, in case you're wondering where all the drugs are going, the U.S. government has injected hundreds of foreigners it has deported with dangerous psychotropic drugs against their will to keep them sedated during the trip back to their home country. The government's forced use of antipsychotic drugs in people who have no history of mental illness includes dozens of cases in which the pre-flight cocktail, as the document calls it, had such a potent effect that federal guards needed a wheelchair to move the slumped deportee into an airplane. Complete details at thewashingtonpost.com. If you want to feel even prouder. Remember in the 60s when we read about the experiments injecting, I believe, Army recruits unknowingly with LSD, and we thought, oh, God, we'd never do that. That concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on Sirius and XM satellite radio, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like knowing what the government charged those deportees for their drug injections, if you'd agree to join me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, uh-huh. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, and Chicago desks. Playlists and a mailing address for the host are available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Go Hornets.